From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 334, Link 2013 Deployment Success with guest Justin Morris. Recorded Thursday, September 5th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I've got Justin Morris coming back on the show again, and he's a Link MVP and a senior consultant for Modality Systems, where he designs, deploys, and helps drive the adoption of Microsoft Link for customers in the UK. He writes his own blog, Justin Morris on UC, contributes to the TechNet Next Hop blog and forums, and is active on Twitter. He's also the co-founder of the Microsoft UC user group in London, and regularly speaks at industry events such as Microsoft TechEd and the Nordic Infrastructure Conference. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, good to be here, Richard.
So it's all Link now, right? You still have the UC user group, but do they actually use the term anymore?
Yeah, we still prefer to, so that we can cover a lot of things outside of Link, like other vendor interoperability and Exchange Server and also Office 365.
Right, yeah. And Unified Communications is a good term, except that it doesn't really seem like a product name.
No, it's kind of more of a solution or platform, and it's something that a lot of different UC vendors tend to have some contention on as to what the true definition is, but it's kind of loosely defined as a solution that can provide instant messaging and presence and conferencing and voice and all these kind of collaboration features all rolled into one suite of software products.
Well, I think it's sort of a subtle thing. Once you see it in action, it makes sense, this idea of integrating together email, IM, and phone.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel it changes business for a lot of companies because it makes the users so much more productive and consolidates a lot of technology assets as well. So, we've had to work really hard in improving the business case over the last couple of years, but now we're seeing a lot more of a wave happening where customers are coming to us and they already get it and they just want some assistance on getting the deployment spec out and the business case finalized and things like that.
Are we still dealing with what is the right way to do this?
Yeah, I think we are. There's still a lot of people that think that, you know, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And there's a big battle going on right now between Microsoft and Cisco and Avaya and Mitel, and which of these vendors provides the best solution both for users and for IT within organizations. And even still within our world, within Link, there's multiple ways to skin a cat. So we always have some things to talk about, especially within the MVP community.
Sure. Well, and the wrestling match for me is, do we still need the phone? Like that physical box sitting on my desk with a handset on it seems archaic now.
Yeah, it really depends on the type of user. A lot of organizations we go and work with, they will mandate a policy of headset only, and that's kind of the default approach. A lot of people within organizations still want a phone on their desk. That's particularly true for a lot of management. So we can provide that option, a Link solution, and a lot of the times it forms a big part of one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And more it seems like that's these SIP devices, like you can get anything you want. Every kind of conference call device, big phones, small phones, like they're all there.
Yeah, that's right. So there's multiple different types of IP phones to sit on a user's desk. There's lots of different conference phones. There's a lot of different room-based video systems coming out now. So it can really tick all the boxes from a traditional voice solution perspective.
Sure. Do we still have the VoIP problem? Like, do you find, are people getting the same quality of calls that they come to expect from the good old-fashioned POTS system?
Yeah, I think if any, they're getting better quality calls now with a voice over IP system, namely with Link. I mean, we can do HD quality audio in a link-to-link environment where it's almost as if you and I are sitting next to each other talking because the quality is that great. when it breaks out to the PSTN or to a legacy PBX, that quality does break down to what you'd usually get on POTS.
Right.
And that's a limitation that we can't do anything about. But you know, once users are all working on Link, they do get really quite high quality audio.
Yeah, it is an interesting effect. And I have nothing bad to say about Skype in that respect too. I mean, I think it's an interesting problem for Microsoft. They own Skype now, and they have Link. So how do you see Microsoft reconciling Link and Skype?
I think it's a really good question because right now I think Microsoft are working on getting the two to interoperate together as well as possible with the Skype Federation that's been working since about April or May this year for audio only, with video being on the roadmap. And I think once that federation, the true federation where all types of communication are taking place has been achieved, then maybe Microsoft will look to enhancing that and integrating Link and Skype further and maybe meshing the two user experiences and applications together. But right now, from my perspective, Link is very much planted in the business space,
right,
and Skype is something that you would have at home and to use in a personal capacity.
I appreciate that the UI experience between Skype and Link are very different, but is the plumbing all that different?
Yeah, it is fairly different in the back end because Skype has come from a peer-to-peer architecture, which has been moved more into a infrastructure-based architecture in recent years, but is mostly on-premise focused. So all of your Link system is in your data center. But there is Link Online in Office 365, which does lend a bit of that as well.
Right.
But the way that the federation is occurring between Link and Skype is effectively there's a lot of Link mediation servers deployed in between that are doing the transcoding between the two environments. And because they're both developed at a very different origins, essentially, they are pretty different products right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's fair. I think most people just don't appreciate that not all VoIP is VoIP. It's that they're different from each other and how they're implemented matters.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like things like Cisco and Microsoft and Avaya VoIP are, very much enterprise-grade PBX-style voice over IP, whereas Skype was born as a kind of least-cost, best-effort, consumer-based VoIP where people would accept some drop in voice quality for the fact that it was free.
Yeah, and I think the peer-to-peer part is sorely underrated. It was one thing when Skype was just Skype, and so this whole peer-to-peer thing was sort of indie and raw. But when you're now owned by Microsoft, peer-to-peer is a little lowbrow for a big company.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting to see how Microsoft's coming to terms with that and whether they want to maintain that brand as Skype as this kind of scrappy upstart. And there's been a lot of commentary on this by Dan York on a blog called Disruptive Telephony, where he says that, yeah, Skype used to be this disruptive force in the voice over IP world, but now as part of Microsoft, they're kind of the industry stalwart and well established, and they've become somewhat dormant, really. So it's interesting to see what becomes of Skype and how they can set themselves apart.
It's tough to be a scrappy upstart when you're the incumbent, you're the biggest in the business. Skype is massive.
Yeah, exactly. And like I think we've seen the same thing in other industries as well, where Apple was the challenger for so many years,
yeah,
but now they've become the standard, and everybody's got an iPhone, and they're no longer the kind of desired device out there. And so you're seeing, Samsung and Android come around.
Sure.
So, we potentially may see a challenger to Skype in the future.
Well, I've always had that thought that both Apple, like Microsoft as well, we're great coming from behind and not that good as leaders. Like it's a very different lifestyle to be a leader.
Definitely, yeah. I think a lot of organizations, when they get to that leader position, tend to rest on their laurels a little bit and don't innovate as much as they did when they were the challenger. So I think that's probably a little bit of a business lesson overall.
Yeah, I just wonder if they don't know what to do next. It was so much easier when you were always competing against the big guy. But when you are the big guy, now what?
Yeah. So you've got to somehow lead a vision in the right direction.
Yeah.
Interesting strategy to ponder over.
And I think it's harder than we realize. You know, it's easy out here to criticize, but inside when you're suddenly, okay, you're the big kahuna now, where are we going? That's pretty challenging.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, we only have to see in the last couple of days with the Microsoft and Nokia deal and all the industry analysis that's taken place on that, and people arguing over what the motivation was. You know, like only the higher ups in Microsoft and Skype would understand the truth.
Yeah, for sure. I know over on the Tablet Show, another show that I'm involved in, we on our 100th episode, which just came out a few days ago, one of the statements in it was, it seems to me that Nokia cares more about Windows Phone than Microsoft does. And you know, I'm excited to have the two of them together because I think it would actually move Windows Phone forward faster.
Yeah, I think so. It was, really interesting last couple of days, to be honest. I think there was a lot of potentially threats that Nokia were being pressured by their shareholders to move to Android and that Microsoft wanted to snap up their number one hardware partner.
Yeah.
But also that this is Microsoft's last chance to make a go of Windows Phone. You know, if they don't do well with the Nokia devices business, then they're going to be find it very difficult to deliver devices to the market, I think.
Yeah, and it's hard to say last chance. Could they have gone and bought HTC instead? Is it already too late? Like, there's so many different arguments in there. I'm willing to just watch. I think it's a pretty good device. I'm really fascinated by how the 520 has taken off.
Yeah, there's been like loads of adoption in the lower spec market that I found. Like, the 520, 620 of the Lumias have been doing really well, apparently. So
that's what Microsoft was always good at, was doing the commoditization of the product. And Nokia, too, is incredibly good at the developing nations market. So why wouldn't we think the 520 would be the one that would take off? And why did we take so long to build it in the first place?
Yeah, I think as Nokia were just trying to compete with, you know, your Apple iPhone 5s and Samsung Galaxy S4 and, you know, trying to build this God phone to compete with those, and didn't realize there was a huge opportunity in the lower end.
And and admittedly, the 1020 is an epic phone. But
yeah.
This was not exactly our planned topic, Justin. We've wandered off in the weeds. I mean, these are
indeed
Link endpoints, right? I don't know if you tried to use a Windows phone for a Link endpoint.
Yeah, I have. I joined a meeting just the other day, actually, on my Lumia 920. It was one of our MVP calls, and I sat there with my little headset in and could see the video of the program managers in Microsoft on my Lumia and participated in the whole thing. So in terms of the meeting experience on mobile devices, Link is very well established in that space now.
Have they made Link clients for iPhone and Android as well?
They have, yeah. We've got Link 2013 mobile clients on Windows Phone 8, Android, and iOS. So that's iPhone and iPad.
Nice. So you pretty much can run it everywhere, just like Skype, too. I mean, I just the other day did a Skype call off an Android phone. I was experimenting with a Nexus 4, and the Skype client there works just fine.
Yeah, and it's that ubiquity that's going to improve the experience on mobile, which is where everything's going now. You know, so whatever Microsoft can do to make that experience as rich as possible is going to really set them apart from the competitors.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started this conversation wanting to talk about getting Link out the door and what the right configurations are. Literally, we circle back to that now we've had some fun in the client space. Because one of the things I think it's been intimidating in an implementation of unified communications or Link, however you want to call it, is just how many VMs are involved here and the kind of hardware you need to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a big first question that we tackle as part of our design phase within a project. And you need to think about which of the servers in a Link deployment are going to be physical, which are virtual, how many vCores and how much RAM need to be allocated in the virtual boxes, and particularly we're circling back now into the physical question in Link 2013, where a Link 2013 front-end server actually requires a significant amount of CPU and RAM resources, mm-hmm. and it makes a lot more sense to have those front-end servers on physical boxes dedicated than it does on a VM host sometimes these days. So there is a lot more of discussion taking place around the physical virtual argument with Link 2013, I feel.
And we've had this debate before. I mean, the SQL Server guy said, oh, we've got to be bare metal and so forth. Like, it seems to me that the virtualization layer is very, very thin. What's the real issue here? I mean, is it hardware? Is it what it connects to?
I think it's just that now, like, a Link front-end server requires 8 cores and, I think, 32 gig of RAM.
Wow.
When you think about stacking that up on a VM host, you may get two of those and one other type of server with less resources onto one VM host. So it almost it erodes the benefit of a virtualized host a lot of the time.
You can virtualize the Link front end as long as it's the only VM on the machine.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's literally no barrier to virtualizing Link as long as you have the required resources dedicated to it to support your users.
Right. I mean, at the simplest level, the fact that it's in a VM means that I can pick it up and drop it on another machine without even blinking. Like, it's just no big deal. But I think the big thing is just provisioning 8 cores and 32 gigs of RAM to it.
You can get like some pretty beefy like bare tin now to set up as a VM host, but
sure,
you need to kind of look at your overall virtualization strategy and whether that makes sense or whether it could just be cheaper to buy some HP DL380s.
Right, and just do them dedicated.
Yeah, especially now with like a Link front end pool with 3 front end servers, DNS load balanced across those 3. I can definitely understand the value of being able to pick up a VM and drop it somewhere else in the network.
Sure.
But when you've got server resiliency built into your solution and back-end SQL resiliency as well, there is a decent amount of HA built into the solution already.
Yeah, absolutely. So you should be able, if you're using Configuration Manager to manage those images, you shouldn't have all that much trouble setting up a new piece of hardware and adding it to the pool. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Besides the front-end services, I mean, do I only want to do this when I have Exchange right beside me?
No, you can definitely set up Link independent of Exchange. Link and Exchange work really well together and complete that whole unified communications vision as such, because Exchange provides voicemail for Link Enterprise Voice users, and Link integrates with Outlook Web App, and there's a lot more integration in Link 2013, actually, with HD photo support and unified contact store, where mm-hmm. your contact list in Link is actually stored within your Exchange mailbox.
Right.
And the way you would typically archive instant messages in Link, instead of archiving those off to a standalone SQL database for Link, you could archive those into your Exchange mailbox. So there are definitely some benefits in integrating Link and Exchange 2013, but you could set up a Link environment independent. If you're in an older version of Exchange, then you could easily just run Link 2013 alongside.
And I guess my thinking also is, if I've managed to push Exchange to the cloud, does it make any sense to run Link locally?
It does, because right now, if you want to have Link voice users, you need to run Link on-premises for
right.
that. There was a bit of a program with Microsoft called Link Hybrid Voice, where you could have some Link users on-premises and some in Office 365. And the Office 365 users would be able to make and receive phone calls through your on-premises infrastructure, but that was deprecated earlier this year due to complexity. And Microsoft have come out and said, we're going to firm up our story on this and come out with something in the near future that allows you to use voice in the cloud. But right now, if you want to use voice for Link, you need to deploy on premises. And that does, it does leave some services still on premises for you, but you can integrate that Link on premises deployment with Exchange in the cloud. So for things like voicemail, you can ensure that all that traffic traverses over your edge and over the internet and into Office 365, and completely move the mailboxes off site.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess the question is, it seems to me that the hybrid solution doesn't provide all the same features as everything on-prem would provide.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple of different feature matrices around the place that compare everything on-prem to some things hybrid, and there are a couple of boxes that have got an X in them where you can't provide the same level of features in a hybrid scenario as you could with everything on-prem.
Yeah, and I think that's an important consideration. You really want to, I think what makes Link compelling is not free long distance. It's that integrated experience, and I would hate to impair any of that.
Yeah, it does, especially when you want to move to a Link voice solution and do things like integrate a call center solution. If you're running Link in the cloud, then you don't have much in the way of integration options there. Or if you wanted to integrate with a Polycom video conferencing solution that you've got deployed around the world, if you're using Office 365, then you don't have a lot of options available to you. So it is, we are still at a place where on-premises makes the most sense.
Right.
For Link.
Do POTS lines actually come into the discussion at all anymore, or T1s, like regular phone lines being tied to this?
We do still see a lot of customers using their T1, E1 circuits with Link, but they're usually only using it in a coexistence scenario where they've got something on the roadmap to move to SIP trunking, where they would bring their SIP trunks into their data center and terminate those on some sort of session border controller and then bring those into Link so it moves them into a fully IP platform.
Right. So you really want a dedicated piece of hardware that just converts those POTS line into VoIP before it touches Link.
Yeah, we traditionally recommend a session border controller or a PSDN gateway, which will do a lot of the conversion from whatever type of legacy protocol is being used on one side, and then standardizes into the type of SIP that Link expects. And these type of devices are really handy in interoperability scenarios with legacy PBXs like old Avayas and Nortels and things like that, where they may talk an older version of SIP, and the session border controller can take that implementation of SIP and then convert it into what Link expects. So
right.
A really versatile piece of kit.
So not just from POTS up to the modern SIP, but the early PBX SIPs, these other flavors, just trying to get it all to the same standard.
Yeah, so they can do everything from taking analog or digital ISDN circuits into Link, and also H323 as well.
Right. But it also, you know, to me, this speaks to, there's sort of a minimum size before Link makes sense. It's not a trivial product to put in. Like, you need a certain number of seats before you really want to play this game.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I would say that a good couple of hundred users would be the kind of tipping point. And prior to that, if you're a small shop, then maybe Office 365 makes a bit more sense for you because it's lower overhead to get into that. But
right.
If you're an organization of maybe, you know, 500 plus users, then deploying a Link Standard Edition server into that size environment would be a good way to enter into a Link solution.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I think it's part of the challenge of the discussion. It you know, every time I end up talking to folks about Link, asterisk comes up. You know, it's hard to argue with this compact Linux VoIP solution. It's pretty lean and pretty inexpensive at a certain scale.
Yeah, definitely. I worked for a company when I was back in Australia a couple of years ago that did have Asterix, and they had some cheap SIP phones just connected to it, and they were able to stand up an office for themselves in Melbourne with, I think, about 40 or 50 people, really cheap implementation, and it did the job for them. They had
right.
a voice over IP PBX up and running, eventually moved them to OCS in the end, but it did the job for a couple of years. And yeah, as you said, it's free and the endpoints can be cheap for that. So that is an option if cost is a sensitive issue.
And there is an interface between like Asterix PSDN gateways and Link too. They're not mutually exclusive to each other.
No, definitely not. We do a lot of interoperability between both traditional analog and digital PBXs and IP PBXs.
Right.
And Asterix is commonly one of those. And I think some of the fellow MVPs have posted guides online on how to integrate with those, actually.
Well, it just sort of speaks to, this is not a rip and replace exercise, which is the way it used to be, you know, 15 years ago in the PBX world. Anytime you sort of hit the wall with the given PBX you're in, and then the Nortels or the Avayas of the world, it's just like, you need a new one. Start over. We're going to tear it all out. Maybe we'll reuse the wiring, but that's it. And that just seems to have passed. We just don't do that anymore.
No, Link is definitely more of a complementary technology where you can deploy it alongside your existing PBX and take a very phased migration approach over to Link. So you could say, okay, we're going to start a pilot at maybe 50 or 100 users and just see how that goes and make sure that we like how Link works, and then draw up a plan to move over the rest of the organization over a 3 to 6 month period and put in a plan to give those users phones and provision them on Link and deprovision them from the legacy PBX. So it's definitely not a rip and replace, big bang type approach that you need to take with this. You can be very gradual and ensure that all the change management is coordinated properly, right, and that users get the right training and communication is involved. And also end-user device selection is a really big, important part of this as well, so that users have the right headset or handset to be able to use Link with once they receive it.
But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, my experience seeing guys on Link is that they like the fact that they're controlling their phone system from their PC. They don't have to learn a new phone, really.
Yeah, a lot of the freedom with Link is that you can control a lot of your call forwarding settings, and I don't have to call up a service desk and say, hey, can you forward my call to my mobile phone for me? I can do a lot of that built right into the client UI.
Well, just the silly ability, you know, it seems trivial, but it's really remarkably difficult to do, to see a phone number in your Outlook contacts and say, call that number. Because without that integration, you have to transcribe that phone number into a phone.
Yeah, I mean, having used Link for, you know, the last couple of years in my professional life, I think I would be completely stuck if I was back to using a phone on a desk and had to sit there and punch it in with my fingers into the DTMF pad. I'm just so used to right-clicking and hitting call and having everything integrated into my desktop now.
Yeah. Well, he sort of speaks to this idea of the keypad is going to go away. Like, why do we have this? The whole idea of a phone number is so archaic now.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's one thing we try to communicate to our customers when we're speccing out a Link voice design and we're accommodating all the traditional dialing behaviors that people have in their PBX, you know. So some people may say, oh, we do 5-digit dialing here in the UK, 6-digit dialing in the US and things like this, and we need to accommodate all of those behaviors. But then we try and say, hey, but you're getting Link, and rather than typing in a extension number into Link and hitting dial, you should search for that person's name, and then you get a lot more richer information about that user's presence, like whether they're busy or away from their desk or about to enter a meeting and things like that. So it's really making it a more people and identity-centric communication platform.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the modern world now. We just can't deal with these silly numbers anymore. It has to just be the identity of the individual.
Yeah, I mean, once it becomes mainstream and our mobile phones are sort of moved away from that, and I can see presence of anybody anywhere, like, I think that's going to be the nirvana.
Yeah, this concept of presence, I think, is the biggest piece long term.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a real key differentiator for Link. I think some other vendors do have it, but I think it's the strongest on Link, with the way that presence is so integrated into not only Link, but other applications across Windows with Outlook and Office and SharePoint.
Well, and just, yeah, the fact that, and I see this with Skype as well, and isn't it funny that Microsoft owns both those things, that I see the call come in on my cell phone as well as my laptop or tablet at the same time, and I could choose, you know, how do I want to answer this? It's up to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really powerful when you may be away from your desk or just about to leave and jump in the car. Like, I see that quite often where I'll be working away and I'll see the call come into my desktop on Link, but then it'll also be ringing on Link Mobile on my Nokia as well. And then yep. I'd say, I'm going to pick it up over here, and then I can just walk out the door and continue that call. And so it's presenting the call to the multiple endpoints that a user is logged into and gives them that flexibility and choice to answer the call how they wish.
Yeah, it's a very transcendent way of thinking about this stuff. And it's funny, I feel like there's a William Gibson line, the future is here, it's just not evenly distributed. And it is exactly like that. If you've spent some time in this world, telephony is so different compared to somebody next door who still has a regular touch tone phone and a regular cell phone and no IP involved at all.
Yeah, I tend to take that for granted, especially working as, you know, a Link guy, where I'm using Link in a day in and day out, and then I walk into some customers that are still, like, really focused on that desk phone and picking it up and dialing an extension and going through. And they don't, like, they might just get a busy tone or voicemail, and then you get these people that are just locked in voicemail jail all day, leaving messages for each other. And I sit there and I'm like, oh, man, I could have just checked if that person was available and then just decided to call them later on when they were. And, yeah, it's sort of, it's always, it's very much a night and day type realization in some scenarios.
It's amazing. Justin, it's always fun to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, Richard.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm excited to see where Link is headed here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Me too.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.